Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Istanbul. The local time here is 4:10 in the afternoon. Please remain seated with your seatbelts fastened.
It's Friday the 17th of March 2017 and I'm in Turkey again, specifically in Antalya. I flew through Istanbul on Wednesday, arrived here Wednesday night, and I was asked to come to an international nursing congress here to give a keynote on From Results to Readership, essentially about writing for publication. I did that yesterday morning, and here's what I spoke about. So I won't spend too much time talking about myself. You've got a biography and some notes in the programme. I'm the editor of the Journal of Advanced Nursing and Nursing Open, which is a different model. And if we've time, I'll talk a little bit about open access publishing towards the end of my talk. I want to talk about several things today, a little bit about writing for publication, a little bit about the process of publication and what we expect, and also about some other things at the end, if we have time. And I will try and get us for coffee by midday, if possible. Is everybody okay?
Yes.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm really grateful. If I'm speaking too quickly, just go slow down. Right. That's how most people write. They surround themselves with lots of papers and sit at their computer, and all I can say is that's not the way to write, okay? If you're writing papers, do all your reading, take all the reading, put it in the next room, sit with an empty desk and just start writing. I think the big mistake many people make is to try and write everything that they've ever read into what they're trying to write. And that's very obvious when we receive manuscripts. I think what you should do is think what you want to write and write it, and then sort out references, English, all these things later. Now, I know that you're writing in a second language. The language of science is English. You have to be able to write and publish in English. And I know how difficult that must be, because I only have three words of Turkish. I've only got three words in most languages, so I don't speak any other languages. But I often get asked by people, should I write in Turkish or should I write in English? And I think I couldn't care less. If you can write in English, that's good. If you can't, write in Turkish and get someone to help you with the English. But whatever you do, don't put barriers in your way to getting published. Just write something, sort it out afterwards. Don't sit there thinking, oh, I don't know how to write English. Write it in Turkish, get a translation, and then get, at the end of that process, you must get a native English speaker to read over your manuscript, okay? Not a local Turkish person who's fluent in English, but a native English speaker. And that doesn't mean to say that they've got to edit it and proofread it, but they need to read it just to make sure that it reads properly. Because one of the biggest problems for papers in second languages, and I include Turkey, is poor use of English, and the English has to be good. But there's no excuse, whether you can speak English or write Turkish or whatever, get someone who can speak English to read your manuscripts just before you submit them. So that's just one hint. Now that's how most people see the publishing process. This is you with your manuscript in your hand, and that's me too. I'm also an author. I author a great deal. I also get rejected a great deal. So I'm in exactly the same boat as you. And for most of my academic life and most of my day job, because I only edit part-time, I'm trying to negotiate that path as well. Sometimes even trying to negotiate it in my own journal, and yesterday the Journal of Advanced Nursing rejected one of my manuscripts. So everything's above board. I have no special entry to my own journal. If I submit a paper, it goes to one of my editors who treat it as ruthlessly as they treat any other manuscript. So what I want to do is, I can't guarantee to help you get past all these people. That's me at the beginning, the editor-in-chief, ready to swipe you down. And there are various people along the way, my editors, reviewers, my managing editor, production. Everybody seems to be putting obstacles in your way, and it does seem like that. But if the more you understand about the process, the more you will be able to negotiate it. And we're all in the same boat. I can't give you a guarantee, but I can tell you if you don't do some of the things I'm saying, you will be guaranteed not to get published. Now, please don't copy this down or try and memorise it. That's just a diagram to show you that the publishing process is actually a process. It's very straightforward. Manuscripts come in at the end, and with any luck, they get down to the bottom, they go off to production, and they get published. But there are various points at which, you, on the right-hand side, the brown boxes where you can be rejected. And you can be rejected because the manuscript, right at the beginning of the process, just doesn't appeal to the editor or the editor-in-chief who looks at it first. So it has to grab them. One of the best ways to grab the editor-in-chief is to write the manuscript according to the guidance for the journal. If the abstract isn't in the right order, then I'm not interested in looking any further. For example, our abstract begins with aims. I was sitting in the hotel foyer this morning using Wi-Fi, looking at the Journal of Advanced Nursing website. I saw a paper which looked quite interesting, but it began with background and then went straight to methods. Didn't follow the abstract guidance, reject. We haven't got time to, and I'll show you why we haven't got time, to deal with papers that aren't perfect at the beginning. And there are other things that we reject for. We reject for similarity with other sources. We check every manuscript for similarity. And then, of course, the reviewers may not like it, and the editors may not like it. That's just luck. But it is possible to get through the process if you tick off certain boxes. So these are the figures from 2015, just to let you see how big the journal is in the sense of submissions. We had submissions from 56 different countries, including Turkey, and we had over 1,000 submissions. Actually, that's a drop in submissions from previous years. We've had up to 1,240, I think, before, nearly 1,250 submissions before. And clearly, if you look at the top of the diagram, you'll see that the English-speaking countries, America, USA, Australia, Canada, are in there. But China and Taiwan are very near the top. And if you took China and Taiwan and Hong Kong together as one sort of greater China, that's a politically sensitive thing, but as greater China, then they are the biggest single group of submissions to the journal. So there are some countries and some regions of the world which are really pushing manuscripts towards us. They're not the highest accepted for various reasons. All the reasons I talked about, use of English, similarity to other sources, things like that. Now, I just got this diagram recently. It just shows you the size, the colour, and the colouring shows the rate at which people are accelerating in submitting manuscripts. And some of the green areas are submitting manuscripts. That's Turkey. Some of the green areas are accelerating in the submission of manuscripts. But you can see that compared with, this is overall, this is not my journal, this is overall in scientific publication, you can see that Turkey's pretty well down to the right-hand end here, and the United States and the UK and some other countries are way up at the top, just as you'd expect. But the colour indicates that these regions here are, including Saudi as well, which I know is far away, but there are certain regions where there's an acceleration in papers coming in, and we notice that. So the best thing to do to get published, everybody asks me, how do I get published? There's no single answer to that. There are several answers, but one of the best answers is to understand the publishing process. And to do that, you've got to write first for editors. Don't think about readership, because if you don't write for the editor, nobody will ever read it. It will be rejected, or it may not be read in that journal. So try to think of what the editor wants right at the beginning of the process, and I'll tell you what the editor wants in a minute. Then you've got to think of the people who are reviewing the... Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong set of slides on the thing here, and I'm slightly behind with the bullet points. Then you've got to think of the reviewers, and the reviewers are experts. They're either clinical experts or they're methodological experts, and you should think that you're writing for experts. Don't try to take shortcuts. Don't try to hide what you've done. Explain clearly. One of the most common comments from reviewers about manuscripts is they haven't explained clearly what they've done. So you need to be crystal clear in every step in what you've done. And then finally, think about your audience. If you don't think about the editors and the reviewers, you won't reach the audience. But you can think about the audience in the end. And the process of publishing is one whereby we try to help you to make your manuscript better during that process. That's all it's about. And we try to publish the best manuscripts we possibly can. Obviously, we want them to be read, we want them to be cited, and I'm sure you want the same thing. So, I've got four rules of writing I'm going to go through very quickly. I have a whole lecture of an hour on the four rules of writing, but I can come back and do that next year, but I just want to go through it very quickly now. First of all, read the guidelines. That's what impresses an editor. We have copious guidelines for the journal. Read them. They're on the web page for the journal. Every journal is the same. Read them, follow them, don't ignore them. They're there to help you to get published. I'm afraid that the guidance is huge these days because there are so many ethical and publishing standards guidelines to follow, but you should still try and make sure you're following at least the guidance for the kind of paper that you are publishing. If it's a randomised controlled trial, follow that particular guidance, as I will show you. The next thing about writing is to, this is about the process of... Oh, slow down a bit, sorry. I'm speaking too quickly. Okay. The next thing that you need to do is to, if you're writing, this is about the process of writing, is set targets and count the words as you're doing them. So if you're writing a 5,000 word manuscript, don't try to write 5,000 words all at once. Try to write 500 words every day or every time you sit down to write it. So try to break writing down into small tasks. Are you going to be happier if there is some translation? Or it's okay, fine, okay, fine, thank you. I want to be. There's no point in me talking if people don't understand, okay? Right. Do try to seek some criticism of your writing. By criticism, I don't mean negative comments. I mean some appraisal of what you've done. If you're writing by yourself and you submit an article by yourself, you probably will deserve to get rejected because it's very good to let someone else see it. Doesn't matter who it is, just let someone else read what you've done and let them comment on it before you submit it. And often people will make the kind of comments that reviewers and editors will make. So take that guidance. If I can't find anyone else to read what I'm doing in my office or in my department, I will let my wife read it. She's not an academic, she's not a nurse, but she'll give me good comments, often very ruthless comments. And the fourth rule of writing is to treat a rejection as the start of the next submission. So don't be destroyed if you get rejected. Just think, right, that journal didn't want it. What have they said about it? Take that guidance into account. Send it somewhere else. There are no rules regarding that at all. You can't send to two journals at once. That's not allowed. But you can send to as many journals as you want. And you should always have a group of journals, you know, high impact, low impact, a specialist, generalist, to think of sending it to those journals if one rejects it. Start where you think you're most likely to be accepted. You might have to move down and across to get to something else. So, on the journal web page, this is the Journal of Advanced Nursing I'm using, but this is for any journal, basically, there's a hyperlink to guidance, and that's what we want you to look at before you even think about writing a paper. I think the other good thing to do, and it's quite obvious that some people don't do this, is to take a look at the journal, take a look online at some papers, especially if you're writing a systematic review. Look at systematic reviews and see how they're laid out. How do people approach them? That's another good way to learn how to get that kind of paper accepted. So the journal guidelines tell you very simple things like what is the length of the paper that we expect, what is the layout, what sort of size of font, double spacing, that kind of thing. What is the organisation, headings, subheadings, introduction, methods, results, discussion. Don't try to change those around. Learn what needs to go into each section. So we tell you that, it's not, we don't keep it secret, or look at a copy of a similar recent paper and you'll see how it's done. And do check the referencing system, okay? Don't use Vancouver if it's Harvard, or Harvard if it's Vancouver. I know it's easy to swap with Ref Manager or whatever, EndNote, but we don't have to do that. You should get it right, and it's a giveaway to an editor-in-chief if he looks at the paper and says, wrong referencing system, they haven't read the guidance. So you've got to get these things right. Editors-in-chief are busy. You know, I only have an hour every morning, about 7:30 to 8:30, before I go to work to do my journal work. I'm in a hurry. I don't read the papers all the way through. I look to see if these things have been followed. If the title looks good and it seems to interest me as well, then it will definitely go forward. And if it goes forward to the editors, it's at least got a chance of being published. If it doesn't go forward to the editors, I'm afraid at that point it's rejected. So try to seek criticism of your writing. Find a critical friend. Don't find the sort of person who's always negative or like that. That's no use. You know, don't give your writing to someone who always tells you it's terrible, because they're no help at all. And don't give it to someone who always says it's great, because they're no help either. Your writing isn't terrible. Your writing isn't perfect. But in the middle somewhere, you know, you can get someone to help you to make it better. Sorry for the sexist image of the man and the woman, but you know what I mean. But get someone who will help you to come up the mountain. It could equally be a woman at the top and a man at the bottom. You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful these days. You've got to be careful. Okay. Right. So that's some hints about writing. And I think the main thing there is getting somebody to look at your writing. And in the case of writing in a second language, get someone who's a native English speaker to take a look at it. Now, I want to talk about some of the standards of publication that we expect to see. There are lots of these, and if you check the Equator webpage, the Enhancing the Quality and Transparency of Health Research page, which I'm sure you're aware of, take a look at the Equator page. All the guidance is on there, it's all up to date, and there's lots of it. But the main ones that you should be taking a look at are the consort guidance, if you're doing experimental work of any kind. That's the method that we expect you to use if you're presenting clinical trials or randomized controlled trials. And the consort page has got links to a checklist and to a flow diagram. And we expect you to submit the flow diagram along with the paper, and we expect to see the flow diagram presented in the paper. And just cut and paste the one from the web page. It's a Word document. We're happy to publish exactly like that in the journal. Don't make your own with three-dimensional boxes and colours and all the rest of it. It's completely unnecessary. So that's one of the standards that we commonly apply. The other standard is the PRISMA standards, which again, some of you may have heard of. This is the preferred system for reporting systematic reviews and meta-analysis, and it's got a web page. If you click on the web page, there's a checklist and there's a flow diagram, exactly like the consort guidance. We expect to see the checklist submitted with the paper, and we expect to see the flow diagram presented within the paper. And again, it's a Word document. Cut it, paste it, use it in your own manuscript submission, and we'll publish it exactly like that. One hint about consort and PRISMA: make sure that the numbers all add up to the top, okay? Because sometimes they don't. They have to all add up to the top. Now, this has nothing to do with Equator. There's lots of other Equator standards for qualitative research and for diagnostic research and cohort research. Look at those yourself. We expect to see them used for that kind of research, but RCTs and systematic reviews are the main ones that we see in the journal. It's well worth having a look as well. I think it's compulsory that all authors, editors and reviewers should look at the Committee on Publication webpage. The Committee on Publication Ethics deals with integrity and ethics in publication. It's got an excellent web page And the web page contains codes of practice for authors, editors, and for reviewers, which we all do. Well worth reading them. I'm quite sure they're available in Turkish. They're available in lots of languages. But if not, they're certainly there in English and certain other languages. But they're very short and very succinct. They're only a couple of pages. But this is what you need to know if you're writing an article. This is what you need to know if you're reviewing. And this is what you need to know if you're an editor, to act ethically at all times. There's also all sorts of other guidance on there, which is well worth looking at as well. It tells you what will happen to you if you plagiarise or duplicate or, you know, do something wrong. Have a look there and you'll see where you get to at the end of that process. Try not to do that. And the final bit of guidance I want to look at is the International Committee of Medical Journal Editors guidance. They've got lots of guidance about how to edit and how to write medical health-related papers, but they have specific guidance on authorship, and it's well worth having a look at the guidance on authorship. This is about who can be on a paper as an author and who shouldn't be, and it's quite clear. So they say that anybody who is an author on a paper should have made a substantial contribution to the conception and the design of a paper, or getting the data and analysing it, obviously, and should have drafted the article and should have approved it for final content. Now, different journals, including my own, change these a little bit, but the principles are the same. So if you haven't conceived or set up the study, if you haven't handled the data, if you haven't written it, and if you haven't, even if you've done one of those three things, if you haven't agreed the final content, you should not be an author on a paper. If you've done all of those things, you should be an author. Now, we know one of the most common things I deal with as an editor is authorship disputes, and there's nothing we can do about it once you've done something wrong or something's gone wrong, but we can ask you to investigate it and maybe come to some conclusion. If someone gets missed off of a published paper, their name can never be added to that paper. So it's very serious if someone should have been an author and didn't get added. So try not to miss people off. They can be added on Medline, on the byline, but not on the published paper. So it's very serious if people do get missed off. So to prevent plagiarism, we use Authenticate. Lots of journals, most of the top publishers use it now. It's like Turnitin. I don't know if you use that. Turnitin. It's the same thing as Turnitin, exactly the same, but it's for the publishing industry. So every single manuscript that comes to the journal goes through Authenticate. If it's too similar, then we investigate. Okay? We do have sensitivity levels. We can talk about those later if you want. Now, I get papers regularly from Turkey, from China, from Iran. I'm thinking of countries just where I see papers coming in, which are good papers, but they don't have any international relevance really, because they're very local and it's very obvious that they're very local, and they're not written in a way that an international audience would see them as interesting. So I think you've got to address the issue of international relevance. This is perhaps not as easy as you think, but this is one of the main issues. So what you've got to do is keep asking yourself whether somebody else in another country would be interested in the paper or could read it and could understand it. So you've got to be very careful about using local language. If I speak from the UK about National Health Service trusts, that doesn't mean anything in Turkey. But you know, it's the way that our hospitals are organised. You need to explain that. So if you're saying something that's specific to Turkey, you need to make sure that somebody elsewhere understands it. A very easy hint is don't write a title called "A Randomised Controlled Trial of X versus Y : in Turkey." Miss that out. You know, don't put the country in the title. Some journals ask you to do that, but most sensible journals don't. It's a giveaway that it's from Turkey. Of course you've got to say in the abstract or the main paper, but don't say at the beginning. Don't say things like "a small local study in one hospital from..." These things just, you know, present your work as it is. Try and give it a good chance to get published. In the abstract, try to refer to the international relevance of the topic. Try to make it as wide as possible. That doesn't mean to say that you've got to mention other countries, but mention the background literature, the international literature. And the easiest way to do that is to review it systematically. Do include the country where the work was done. Do make sure that's included in the abstract. And try to emphasise at the end how international it is. Don't leave people guessing. A good hint is just use the word international. Just say the international relevance of this study is. But don't try to make it local and of no interest outside of your own country. You've got to work quite hard to do that. Okay, so that's one thing that's difficult. I must say, I don't know if there are any North Americans in the audience, it's very difficult for people to get published in North America from any other country, basically. That's just a thing, that happens. So you've really got to think very hard if you want to publish in American journals, how to make it interesting to that particular audience. So in the process of writing, do be aware that you will not just write a paper once and send it off, or write it once, give it to somebody to read. You will go through revision after revision. Famous American writer was asked, "Are you the world's greatest writer?" He said, "No, I'm the world's greatest rewriter." So you've got to expect to do 5, 10, 15 drafts of a paper. You've really got to work on it. But you've also got to learn when to let go. Don't hold on to it forever. So there's a balance to be struck there. You've got to go through several drafts, get it into a state where you're happy with it, give it to someone else to read, take their comments, implement them in the paper, then it's time to send it off. Because if you sit trying to make your paper perfect, you will sit forever. And that is often a problem that people encounter. They spend far too long looking at the paper and wondering how to make it better, when what they should do is send it out, because the reviewers and the editors will soon tell you how to make it better. They may reject it, of course, but eventually it'll get accepted. So that's part of the process. So you've got to let it go at some point. Then you'll get the reviewers' comments back again, and you've got to be very careful here. Apply what we call the Golden Rules by Williams. I can send you this paper too if anyone's interested. First of all, answer everything completely, answer politely, and answer with evidence. So answering completely means dealing with every single point that the reviewers make, even if you can't change it or you disagree with it. If there's something that a reviewer says, don't ignore it. You know, write it down and say why you can't deal with that point. Nothing endears reviewers and editors less than if points are ignored. So make a list of the points, even if they're not given as a list. If they're given as a block of text, pull out the main points, show them that you've read them in detail, and show them where you're dealing with them. Another really good idea is when you do changes, do them in red, and that focuses the reviewer back on the bits you've written, shows them that you've done it, and they don't read the rest of the paper and come up with any other stupid ideas about your paper. They just do it. So it's a good tactic. It always works for me. Answer politely. Don't say, "Well, we completely disagree with the comments of the reviewer," or "Who on earth are you reviewers?" It really doesn't help. You have to be polite, because we ask our reviewers to be polite to authors, and if we find reviewers who are not being polite, we stop them from reviewing. Well, we have a quick word with them. If they keep doing it, we stop them from reviewing. So we expect authors to try to be polite in return. And answer with evidence. Try and present some evidence. The best way to present evidence if you're disagreeing with someone's point is to do it politely and say, "These references are the ones we refer to. They say this, so we've gone with that." I've always managed to get papers accepted when I've had to do that, and I've had to do that quite often. Right, I'm just jumping on, a few minutes left. The next thing I wanted to talk about briefly was using social media. And social media have become very important in the publishing industry. There's lots of different social media sites. I know that Twitter's I can see that Facebook's used here. Twitter's quite popular in Turkey as well, because I've got many Turkish followers on Twitter, and the Journal as well has got a Twitter site. And I would say that one thing you should really be thinking about is, if you publish a paper, is to get onto social media and use it to promote your paper, because we will, okay? And we're very interested in doing that. If you feel like this about Twitter, which many people do, well, you've got to get over it, because it's happening. You know, you can't ignore it. Okay, so I would really say it's almost compulsory for academics these days to be on Twitter. Twitter is declining in the general population, but it's going up amongst academics. Twitter, blogging, Facebook to some extent. And the power of Twitter is that it amplifies very easily and very quickly what people say. For example, here's within 1, 2, 3 tweets, you go from one tweet, ends up with something like nearly 20,000 hits within 3 tweets. That can take place in about 30 seconds, you know. I've seen it happen with things that I've put out myself. Those won't all be read, they won't all be downloaded, but if 10% of them are downloaded and 10% of them are read, then that's 10% more than the people. That's another 100 people more than would have read the paper otherwise, who may read it, who may cite it, who may use it, and who may retweet what you've put out. So I would really strongly encourage you to get into this. I won't go into this in detail, but there is some hard evidence for the effect of what's called twitations and twimpact. There are some scientific papers showing that papers that are highly tweeted and highly blogged about tend to be more cited. And also another article from Transplantation showing that the odds ratio of articles being mentioned in social media and being cited are highly correlated. Hard to know the causation, but there is other evidence coming out. And we're beginning to measure something called altmetrics. So we report how often papers are blogged about, tweeted about, mentioned in online newspapers and that kind of thing. So I can't emphasise enough how important we see this, and we really, it's great if authors get involved in helping us to do that, making podcasts, YouTubes, blogging, whatever, but getting it out using Twitter. Okay, so finally I just want to say a word about open access publishing. Now, this isn't an advert just for my journal, but that is my journal, Nursing Open. It's fairly new. It's only 3 years old. We are publishing to our schedule. We're getting submissions. We could always do with more submissions. It does cost money. It's open access pay to publish. The paying comes after you're accepted. You're not paying to guarantee to get published. You're paying to get it published in open access to buy the license. And yeah, publication fees are important. The publication fees are very high. I know that. But because the publication fees are very high for open access journals, and we're hoping to have an impact factor within maybe 2 or 3 years. So we're hoping to be up there with the other journals. We're hoping to get onto the Early Sources Citation Index, which Hussein mentioned earlier on. But just to warn you, that there's a whole industry out there ready to take your money and to take it from you for very low quality publication. And these are not real publishers, these are predatory publishers. From 2011 to 2016 has grown by an order of magnitude. The number of journals has grown likewise, and these are all what are called predatory journals. They take your money, they may publish your article, they may not publish your article. They take your money, they guarantee to get you published quickly. Those of us who've published at all must get plagued daily with lots of emails. Greetings, esteemed professor, how is your health today? We've already accepted your article in. Well, I mean, that's impossible, they're just looking to get money. So you mustn't respond to these, okay? You mustn't respond to them. You've also got to be aware of what are called predatory websites or false websites, but that's another issue. But some journal websites have been used by other people, hacked into, and made to look like a proper web journal. There aren't many of these, but there are enough of them to make it a worry. But if for example, you saw the Journal of Advanced Nursing website and they were asking you to pay to publish your article, you would know it was false, it was fake. So just be very careful. So if you were in any doubt at all about open access journals, there's a directory, DOAJ, Directory of Open Access Journals. If you get an email or you want to check on an open access journal, have a look there. You may not just want to check it for publishing. You may want to check it because you're reading an article and you want to know if it's any good or not. Check there and you should find the journal. There's my journal, Nursing Open, with a green tick, for example. But there's lots of other journals with green ticks. The green tick means it has an international editorial board, it has peer review, etc. You know, it's of a certain quality. Right, and finally, if you're interested, there is a book. It's a little bit out of date just now. It's about 5 years old, Writing for Publication in Nursing and Healthcare, Getting It Right, edited by myself and a colleague, Karen Holland, who works with Elsevier. I work with Wiley, so it's across publishers. And it's multi-authored by various people, writing about all of the things I've talked about. As I say, it's a little bit out of date now. It needs to be updated, but it does have some useful advice that might be useful to get it for your library. You can get it online. You don't have to buy a hard copy. And the more copies you buy, the richer I get. So there you go. Finally, thanks very much. I hope that you were able to understand what I was saying. I'm sorry we would have been here too long had I used a translator. I emphasise again, I'm here for 2 days. I'm totally available if people want to come and speak to me. My email address is there. Don't hesitate to email me for the slides. Don't hesitate to email to ask me questions. I offer what I call after-sales service. I'm happy to comment on manuscripts, not necessarily for my journal. My Twitter site is there as well if you want to follow me. And if you want to check up on my own publications, you can check on my ORCID number or use the QR code. To scan the QR code, it'll take you to my ORCID page. So thank you very much for the invitation, Hussein. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you, and I'll see you around the conference. Good morning.